This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
Well, it's so great to have as our guest today, Eric Margolis. Eric is the contributing foreign editor for Sun National Media in Canada. He's the author of War at the Top of the World and his new book, American Raj, Liberation or Domination, Resolving the Conflict Between the West and the Muslim World. And we could talk about the Middle East and all those matters because Eric Margolis, unlike the talking heads you see on American television, is an actual expert. Maybe that's why you don't see him as often as he ought to be on. But he's an historian, too, and I've always been moved and informed by his writing on, I guess, maybe the most horrific event in world history, certainly in the history of the West, with all that it led to, and that's World War I. Eric, tell us why that was such an extraordinarily awful event.
Well, Lou, I have been walking the World War I battlefields for probably 25 years, and I go at least twice a year still to Flanders or Lorraine in France, to Alsace, and I've covered every battle, practically every battlefield and fortifications along the border, and I'm always overcome by melancholy and a sense of tragedy at the unbelievable suffering that the soldiers on both sides went through in this most ghastly of wars, a siege, trench warfare. And I'm also overcome because I'm so familiar with Europe, and I saw France in the Belle Époque, Europe around 1900, 1910, was at its apogee of greatness, culture, and full of life and art and everything. And then this monstrous war came, which really nobody wanted, or some people wanted, but most people didn't, and it destroyed Europe. It was a European civil war, and of course it laid the groundwork for the subsequent horrors 20 years later of the Nazis. It opened the way for the Bolsheviks and for the handing over of half of Europe to Soviet domination.
Eric, you've pointed out what a disaster within a disaster American intervention in that war was.
Well, it pains me as an American to say this, but my belief is that by 1917, both the Central Powers and the Allied Powers had exhausted themselves, and they were making tentative moves to open peace talks. And if a peace had come at that point, it would have been ideal. Really, all sides, I think, were pretty by then ready to just go back to the status quo ante bellum. But the decision by Woodrow Wilson and his advisors, which was in part motivated by British torrents of British propaganda, the British controlled the transatlantic cable. And it was one of the first things they did when the war broke out was to rip up the cable that the Germans were using, and they used the sole cable, and they fed the United States all kinds of war propaganda, which changed American public opinion and helped bring America in on the war. But it was really Woodrow Wilson's decision to enter the war. And by sending a million troops to France, America tipped the balance. They hardened the position of the Allies, the British and the French and the Italians, who realized they were going to win, so they exerted maximum demands on a defeated Germany. And the result of this was the Versailles Treaty, and we know what happened after that.
No, this became a total war, and also led to the demands for the total destruction of the German regime, which, as you say, made possible the coming to power of Hitler and all the horrors that followed from that. But I remember, for example, the British starvation blockade that was enforced against Germany after the signing of the armistice to make them agree to the Versailles Treaty. And a lot of people died in that, and it caused, of course, a lot of hatred and bad reactions, and they attempted to starve civilians.
Well, you're absolutely right, Lou. In fact, what brought the Central Powers to their knees in the war wasn't battlefield victories, it was starvation. The British naval blockade that cut off all food imports for Germany and the Austro-Hungarian Empire, which could not feed themselves. They didn't have enough arable land. This was a war crime under international law, yet this is what the Allied powers used. But, you know, what was also very interesting is that Hitler, one of the things Hitler rightly concluded from this, he said German national security demands that Germany have enough farmland to be able to feed its own population of 80 odd million people. And for Hitler, this clearly meant that Germany had to occupy the Ukraine. This was the available form, just the way George Bush Sr. said in 1990 and 91. He said, you know, America's national security depends on access to oil. America went to war for oil, as Japan went to war for oil, too. Well, Germany went to war for food, and this is an element that has rarely been understood.
Eric, tell me what you see about the current world. I mean, maybe we're leaving, one messianic president is leaving office, and maybe our own current version of Woodrow Wilson. There's a new president coming in. But are you optimistic about the future? I mean, I notice there's still a lot of agitation to bomb Iran and to maybe even go to war against Syria and start all other kinds of troubles.
Well, Lou, the powers that be in Washington are still there. And they're very powerful. Look at the retention of Senator Lieberman in the Homeland Security chairman's position. This was a man who richly deserved to be booted out, but because of his political affiliations, he was retained. I'm concerned that that President-elect Obama is under intense pressure already from the powers that be, whether it's the Pentagon or the Israel lobby or Big Pharma or the farm lobby or whatever. I mean, they've all got their armies of lobbyists working there and twisting his arm even before he's gotten into office. And the problem is that Obama may have some good ideas, but he has this intense political opposition. He has a Congress that's shown it has no courage whatsoever. And he has a bankrupt country that has overcommitted right now, and yet he's still talking about expanding a war in Afghanistan, which my view would be a dreadful mistake, making some threatening noises towards Iran. He has areas, America's gone a bridge too far. We need to pull back rather than to go forward.
Eric, unlike all the people, as I mentioned on American television talking about Afghanistan, you are an actual expert. I mean, you're the actual real deal. Talk to us a little bit about Afghanistan.
Well, Lou, what's happened is the war in Afghanistan has been marketed to Americans as part of the war against terrorism. It's payback for 9/11. It's a good war. Obama has used those words, too. This is not the case. What has happened is that Al-Qaeda, which was a legitimate target, is long gone from Afghanistan. It was never more than 300 people anyway. I was there during its days. It was a tiny organization, been totally blown out of all proportion by the Bush administration for its own reasons. Al-Qaeda's gone. What's left is Taliban, which is was a religious movement, a religious anti-communist movement of the Pashtun tribal people. The Pashtun are half Afghanistan's population, 20% of Pakistan's population, 15 to 20%. And we are now fighting the Pashtun people, who have been excluded from power by the United States when it's invaded and put its blood enemies, the Tajiks and the Uzbeks, two minorities who were allied with the Soviets when they invaded Afghanistan and who formed the core of the Afghan Communist Party and continue to do so. These people are our allies. They're also the leading drug dealers. They dominate the drug trade in Afghanistan. And now we're fighting our old allies from the 1980s when I was there, the Pashtun. This is wrong. And there will be no peace in Afghanistan until the Pashtun are included in political power. And there's going to be no military solution to this war, but only a negotiated one.
How long do you think that's going to be in coming? I mean, will Obama really send in more troops and really step up the war?
Well, I tend to think he's probably going to send more troops in initially, but then say, well, they may try and find some negotiated settlement. But what's happening is General Petraeus, who's a very capable and smart officer, who's now in command of the area, what they're trying to do is lure Taliban into negotiations so they can split it apart. This is what was tried fairly successfully in Iraq. However, I don't think this is going to work. We have to really show that we want genuine negotiations and that we intend to enfranchise the Pashtun people in Afghanistan. If we don't do this, Lou, the war is spreading very rapidly into Pakistan. It's intensifying by the day. The U.S. is getting sucked into a new war in a nation of 165 million people with a 650,000-man army and nuclear weapons. this is crazy and it's extremely dangerous, and we have got to shut down the war in Afghanistan before it really infects all of Pakistan and presents us with an unbelievably dangerous problem.
But hasn't Obama at least implied that he might want to go to war against Pakistan?
Well, he said that he would, if he knew, if they identified al-Qaeda targets, that he would attack, go after them inside Pakistan. The commander of the Pakistani Armed Forces, General Kiani, has said that his soldiers will resist any American attacks, though there are almost daily attacks by CIA predator, sort of air assassination attacks against targets inside Pakistan. It's a mess, and the tribal territories where these attacks are happening becoming increasingly turbulent. And the danger down the line, Lou, is that if this area fragments, like, you know, like we tore apart Iraq, which is now divided into three parts, one of the reasons violence has subsided there, if we do this in Pakistan or in the Pakistani border areas, it's going to tempt India, which is feeling very muscular and even aggressive, and is moving into Afghanistan to try maybe even consider attacking Pakistan if it's disintegrating. So it's a very dangerous situation.
Eric, I wanted to end up by going back to World War One. You wrote a very moving piece about mutiny of the French army during the war and what I as a libertarian would say their attempt to change their jobs, but anyway, what in military parlance is called a mutiny, and how the French government murdered tens of thousands of their own troops in order to keep the war going. And yet this is one particular incident that virtually no one knows anything about.
Yeah, Lou, it remains one of the biggest, most closely guarded secrets of France. So the figures have never been revealed. I think the official figures are a few hundred troops were shot, but the numbers runs into many thousands. The number is extraordinary. Unfortunately, the Germans never learned that a large portion of the French army had mutinied. Otherwise, they could have broken through and the war would have been ended, and we wouldn't have had Adolf Hitler and probably not Stalin either. But they didn't, and the war went on. But what is so tragic, Lou, anytime you go to a village in France, no matter what village it is, it has a war memorial, and on it they have 15, 20, 30 names, even in tiny villages, mostly from the Battle of Verdun or the Chemin des Dames. And you see that the whole generation of young Frenchmen was wiped out in this war. France was a country of around 40 million, then lost 2 million dead alone, and gassed veterans were still, there were seats for them in streetcars in Paris and buses until the 1990s. So it was a tragic event that France suffered nationally because so many of its troops went to the front.
Eric Margolis, thanks so much for being with us today. And anybody who wants to learn about the real story on foreign affairs, read Eric's archive in LouRockwell.com, read his books. And Eric Margolis, you're a shining light in a very dark field, people who write about foreign policy. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Lou. I glow with pride. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@LouRockwell.com. And thanks for listening.